You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us no matter where you are listening around the state. Give us a call. Send us a text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up on the show after the 9:30 news, Judge Paul Michel is going to join us. He is a member of Keep Our Republic's Article 3 Coalition. And among many things, as we had mentioned yesterday, we're going to talk about Judge Hannah Dugan here in Milwaukee County. She made her appearance yesterday in court, and we will kick that around. Also, habeas corpus. Getting to know habeas corpus.
Oh, it's an important one.
It is an important one, and it is something that a Trump administration official has suggested. We can just throw that out. We don't really need that.
You know what I'm going to throw on top of habeas? I'm just going to throw the Constitution, some lighter fluid, hit a match, poof, gone.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about habeas corpus and what that means and why that's important with Judge Paul Michel. Again, that's coming up after the 9:30 news. In the 10 o'clock hour, the Republican-controlled legislature in Wisconsin. We've talked a lot about child care.
Oh, yeah.
And what our child care providers need and what parents need. And, the legislature has their answer. And my response is, that's it. That's your fix. After the four Joint Finance Committee meetings that they held around the state, where the top three considerations were child care, affordable housing, and health care.
Yeah.
They weren't listening. No. They were playing Candy Crush. Come on, let's just admit it.
No, it's what experts in the industry call, what do we look up here? Dog and pony show.
That sounds correct. Yeah. Yes. So that will be next hour. And then also next hour, Derek Van Orden did something good.
Just stand there for a moment. That other shoe will drop anytime.
I don't know.
I'm so cynical at this point.
I think this could be a good thing if this is actually true. Right. And then the last half hour of the program, audio sorbet, where we try and lighten things up a little bit, take a breath away from the news. We want you to fill in the blank.
Yeah.
After 10:30, I went to buy a blank and I ended up with a blank.
Yeah.
That's coming up after 10:30. This happened to you yesterday.
It's like an SAT question.
We'll wrap up the show as we always do with this. Shouldn't be a thing. Today it is the If It Looks Like a Duck edition. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned for that. Wanted to start off, though. We had mentioned this at the top of yesterday's show about that deadly fire at an apartment complex in Milwaukee that broke out over the weekend. Five people were killed tragically and over 100 people now in temporary shelter. If you want to make a donation, you can help out, give to the Red Cross. Mm-hmm. Red Cross is assisting these people. But the thing that's the topic now are sprinkler systems in apartment buildings.
Yeah.
One other side note as well, Milwaukee investigators still not ruling out the possibility that this fire was set intentionally, which is horrific. Milwaukee Fire Chief Aaron Lipsky not ruling that out. He said the investigation, one of the deadliest in Milwaukee in decades, continues, but there are some reports that say that a boyfriend, girlfriend were having an argument and someone threw an accelerant into an apartment and that may have been what sparked it. Finding the cause of fires like this takes time.
Yeah, it's an investigation.
So they don't know that for certain, but, and either way, this apartment building did not have a sprinkler system.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the big topic, and what should be done about that. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss.
Popcorn King.
Himself a landlord.
Oh, here he is. He's here. He's arrived.
Robin Voss is a landlord, and he was asked about this. Now, it's my understanding that up until either 1971 or 1974, those buildings, those apartment buildings, are exempt from having sprinkler systems.
Yeah.
Anything built after that and newer buildings have to come with these sprinkler systems. Here is what Robin Voss had to say about this deadly fire in Milwaukee from over the weekend. Calvin, can you play that clip, please?
We want to ensure that, of course, people are safe, but we have to be careful about overreacting to a single or unfortunate incidents like this, which occur, but less and less likely over time. Wisconsin, like most of the country, has a housing crisis, and it's mostly focused on affordability. The last thing that we want to do is to make it even more expensive to own a home or to rent an apartment.
I guess I don't disagree with that, but I would also think that getting sprinkler systems installed is a good way to protect your investment.
Yeah, but if they have insurance and it burns down, then there you are. And I looked it up just to clarify. It was anything constructed in before 1974 that are 60 feet or higher are not required to have sprinkler systems. And it said this exemption also applies to high-rise buildings in Milwaukee, as nearly 70% were built before 1974.
Wow.
That is a scary thought to me.
It is. Five people were killed in that Mother's Day fire on Milwaukee's near northwest side. 30 people had to be rescued by firefighters. Some people were jumping out of second floor windows.
Yep.
Trying to get out of there. Again, the 85-unit building was built in 1968, was not required to have sprinklers. Milwaukee Fire Chief Aaron Lipsky said, "You make absolutely no mistake, this dramatically impacts the survivability in a building once a fire starts." Again, Robin Voss said passing a new law that would require sprinkler systems might feel good in the moment, but will likely result in landlords passing on the costs of installing those, which he suggests will lead to more homelessness. This is, I mean, I'm not saying that he's not accurate about that. Rent is crazy expensive.
Yeah, but the problem with what he said is he opened another can of worms. Yeah, we need to. Angela and Matt talked about this morning on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. They're filling in, by the way, today and tomorrow. And she was talking about being in Madison or talking to legislators and finding out that this is, by the way, not a Republican thing, because Democrats in power in Madison own properties and they do not want any sort of mandate which causes them to cost money. And he's right. The cost of rent is high and the cost of housing is high. How do we handle that one while we're at it? Which is something they don't even want to touch. So I feel it's disingenuous to use that as a reason when you're not even going to try to do something to fix that as well. Like all of a sudden you care about the price of homes and apartments. No, you're using it as a reason not to ensure the safety of the people who are living there. So thanks, Robin, but no thanks, because you don't want to take on anything. So
Highland Court Apartments, where this fire occurred again over the weekend, was not required by city codes to have sprinklers because of the age of the building. But again, Milwaukee Fire Chief Aaron Lipsky said sprinklers could have saved lives. People caught in fires are 90% more likely to survive if the property has automatic sprinklers. Only 8% of homes and apartments in the U.S. have such a system.
Yeah, this is a tragedy. And Robin Voss's response, in my opinion, is nothing more than saying thoughts and prayers. Like, yeah, that's too bad, but we can't really do much about it because, ugh.
Well, and when we talk about the high price of rent and the high price of homes, mm-hmm. one of the continuing problems is a lack of inventory and not enough things are getting built.
Yeah. Well, now Milwaukee is focusing on.
But Milwaukee seems on real high-end properties, though.
Yeah, but they're focusing on building expensive apartments, condos, because they want so desperately to attract young business people and small families back to Milwaukee to raise the population, to add to the economy, all those things. But the problem is some of them aren't being occupied because, one, families might not want to live here or in Milwaukee. And also, like, It's really expensive.
Well, I have a friend who lives in the third ward in a newer building. It's probably only within the last 10 years.
An apartment or a
they're in a condo.
Are they owning or renting?
They own.
Okay.
They bought their condo. Okay. It's tiny.
Yeah.
Teeny tiny. Mm-hmm. But they have a little balcony that overlooks the river.
Yeah.
But they have told me the vast majority of units on their floor are owned by people from Chicago.
Yeah, that's
so they only come up on maybe they come up a couple weekends a summer.
That's something we dealt with when I lived in Racine too. All these individuals who own slips for their boats own apartments or rent apartments in Racine. They come up here because, you know, Chicagoans love Chicago, but they love coming to Wisconsin because it's so much cheaper. But after August or September, they're not adding to the economy.
Right.
And people can't rent those places even if they could afford them.
It's a problem.
It's a big problem. And I really wish that Robin Voss would be serious about trying to find a solution. I mean,
and I think it's important what Angela said, in that there are Democratic politicians in Wisconsin who are also landlords.
Absolutely.
And so it's not just one side.
No. I'm not painting as one side. I'm just saying Robin Voss is the commander in chief of denial. He does not want to do anything. He never wants to help. He always has a reason not to. And it always seems like it's important to listen to why he doesn't want to help you. But as you just read, the fire chief of Milwaukee said that 5 people died and could have possibly been saved with sprinklers. So 5 lives is not enough are we talking about guns again? Are we talking about guns? Is 5 lives not important enough to take up this matter to try to find some solution? I'd say make a rebate or a tax credit system where landlords could install these systems and get something back from the state or possibly the Fed. But God knows they take that out because, as we said yesterday, they want to separate policy from finance.
Yeah, right.
This is tragic. People are mourning the loss of families, and we're sitting here talking about, you know, oh, the rent is so high. Yeah, it is. Do something about it. But they won't do that either.
In 2008, the Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Standards tried to mandate sprinklers in apartment buildings with 4 or more units built after 2011. It got a lot of pushback from the home building industry. And then Governor Scott Walker signed a law prohibiting state agencies from writing rules that are more restrictive than state law.
This is what I was talking about yesterday. And I don't like harping on them all the time, but every time you face a Republican with something, they change the rules. You can't write rules. My job is to write rules. So what do I do? I don't know. Do you like Candy Crush?
Then Attorney General Brad Schimmel issued a legal opinion in 2017 agreeing that the rule was unenforceable, to the big disappointment of local fire chiefs. That decision, though, later overturned by AG Josh Call. In 2021, plans for dwellings with 3 or more units submitted to the department after 2021 now must have a sprinkler system.
Good.
Again, if you would like to help out these folks, 5 people died. There are at least 100 that now have no place to live and have essentially lost everything. So you can contact the Red Cross, make a donation to the Red Cross. And as we always like to say, too, about giving blood.
It's always a good time to give blood. They're always in need. And I've said it before, and I'll say it until the day I can't say it. If every person who was eligible gave once a year, there would be no shortages. And
think about that.
Right now, they could use it. So there will be links in the show notes to Red Cross as well as Versity for donating. Just get out there, help, and yeah.
Do what you can.
Do what you can.
Do what you can. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and the Board Lord coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up later on today, 2 to 4, our friend and colleague Todd Alba is going to have a midweek recap of all the state headlines and how you can positively persuade people when it comes to politics.
Oh, boy.
So he's going to have Trigby Olson on, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project, and then a summertime edition of What's Worse. God only knows what that's going to be. It's a lot of What's Worse. It's great. It really is great. So join Todd today from 2 to 4 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network. Something that happened, which I just went, what? This is from the Wisconsin Public Radio, Anya Van Wagendonk with the byline. Wisconsin pharmacists could prescribe birth control under bipartisan assembly bill.
Wait, did you say bipartisan?
I did, which means both sides agreed on something. We try to highlight that.
I don't understand. It's birth control, too.
Because it's such a rarity, so we do like to kind of focus on that when we can actually come together and get something done. Seems like a good thing.
I'm
are you stunned?
I'm stunned, speechless.
I know. Lawmakers in the assembly approved a bipartisan bill yesterday allowing pharmacists to prescribe contraception. A proposal previously faced headwinds in the full legislature. Representative Joel Kitchens, a Republican from Sturgeon Bay, lead author of the contraception bill across multiple sessions. He said this will lower hurdles to getting birth control and help low-income women avoid unwanted pregnancies. Quote, along with drug addiction, unplanned pregnancy is the number one contributor to generational poverty, unquote. And he added the bill will also help lower the need for abortions. The bill, co-sponsored by several Democrats, backed by a range of medical and public health organizations. No surprise, it's opposed by anti-abortion groups. But it passed 87 to 10, with only 10 Republicans opposed.
All right, Jane, I don't want to sound like the as Mrs. McMiller said in our choir, the poop and the milk here. Like, I'm trying to ruin things, but this seems too good. You know what I mean? Like they're actually doing something
positive for people?
Out of nowhere, and on an issue as divisive as birth control, childbirth, anything having to do with human life coming into the world, that a bipartisan bill would come out like this and pass strongly.
Yeah.
And Joel Kitchens, you know, the guy who knows more about pregnancy than anyone because he's a veterinarian.
Oh, that's right.
It just feels like I'm going to walk in the room and there's going to be a big hand that's going to slap me in the face going, we got you.
Well, don't worry. It's going to go to the Senate.
Or will it?
That good point there.
Devin, are you listening?
Yeah.
Are you working that day?
Yeah. We'll see if it makes it to the Senate, and then I would likely assume that the Senate will crush it. But as it is written, the bill allows a pharmacist to dispense hormonal birth control rather than requiring a person to first get a prescription from a doctor. Pharmacists would still have to explain that birth control does not protect against sexually transmitted diseases.
And it doesn't guarantee no birth either.
No, it doesn't. There's no 100% sure birth control except abstinence, which is really popular.
That's no fun.
But again, this is a positive thing. I am delighted to see something happen that both sides came to agree on. But again, pretty much if it makes it to the Senate, I'm fairly certain they're going to squash it there because why would we do something that seems to help?
Why would we take up an issue, Jane, in which the Wisconsin public and the United States pretty much agrees that there should be? It's overwhelming, like as far as like access to birth control and contraception and those types of things. People are, it's sort of like, yeah, of course I do. I got to get to work. Stop asking me questions. It's a no-brainer, but leave it to Wisconsin to step in the poop on this one. I guarantee it's going to happen.
Well, we will continue following this and see where this goes. Before we went to the break, we were talking about that tragic fire at that apartment complex in Milwaukee that happened on Sunday. Lost 5 lives, and now over 100 people are without a place to stay. Talking about sprinkler systems in apartment buildings, Richard from Waukesha is on the line, and you wanted to comment about that. Richard, thank you for joining us. What did you want to say?
Hi. Well, I've got a little pun on the end, but if they were to put sprinkler systems on one hallway, one floor a year, you could maybe get peace of chance there. You know, like the automobile industry, how they put in pollution control a little at a time.
Instead of taking it all on in one fell swoop.
Yeah.
Right. And maybe have some financial benefit or some, you know, easier method.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Richard. Appreciate it. Greg, that's what you had said. If they could get something back from the state. But again, it's Robin Voss's $4 billion surplus.
It's not even getting interest, I believe. It's just sitting there.
He gets to decide where that money goes.
Yeah.
And it should go to Diane Hendricks. But anyway, we have news coming up next. And then when we return, we're going to be joined by Judge Paul Michel. He is a member of Keep Our Republic's Article 3 Coalition. We're going to learn about that. And also habeas corpus. Why should we care? What does it mean? That's all on the way. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calby on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine, where you can always join us. Call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Happy to be joined by our guest. He is a member of Keep Our Republic's Article 3 Coalition. Judge Paul Michel is here. Good morning, Judge Michel. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning to you and your listeners.
Judge, can you tell us, first of all, what this organization is that you belong with? What is Keep Our Republic's Article 3 Coalition, and what is your goal?
The coalition has presently 30 retired federal judges as members, and the number keeps growing day by day. Our goal is to help people understand, in the din of claims and counterclaims and propaganda, how courts work and what they need to do their job properly, which basically is to not be interfered with so that the judge can decide the case on the law and not on political power plays by anybody.
Essentially, stay out of it and let us do our job, right?
That's a good way to put it. And of course, the job sometimes involves checking excesses by the Congress or the executive branch. If they go beyond their legal authority and do something unlawful, then it's the job of the court to say, well, that's unlawful, it cannot stand.
It's just, that is more important than ever. I think now that we're under the second Trump administration and we see some of the things that are going on and some of the things that they are kicking around. And I wanted to start with this because I am not that well versed in habeas corpus. And I would really like you to explain, Judge Michel. Again, Stephen Miller, who was in the Trump administration, says we can suspend habeas corpus, no big deal. What does that mean? What is habeas corpus, first and foremost?
Great question. Of course, it's an ancient Latin phrase. It's been a feature of American law since the beginning, and before that, for centuries, English law. The basic idea is that if somebody is detained under assertion of lawful authority by somebody, usually an executive branch official, that lawfulness should be able to be tested by a judge. So if there's evidence to support an arrest or other detention, that can be presented to the judge, and then the judge says, okay, there is a lawful basis, go ahead. If there is not a lawful basis, then the judge says, stop, you must free that person you've detained because there's no lawful basis to hold that person. So it's a test of legality.
So essentially, say I get arrested for some reason, I get taken into custody by the administration for some reason, and habeas corpus allows me to defend myself and say, this is why these charges are bogus, or this is why these charges should not apply. Is that accurate?
That's true, but it's also a chance for a judge to question the government official who's arrested you. Say, what was your basis? Did you have a warrant? What are the facts? What law are you acting under? So it's a chance for the arrested or detained person to give their side of the story, but it's also a chance for the judge to make sure that the basis asserted by the arresting authorities is fully tested.
And Judge, one of the things they're saying about this, the wanting to suspend habeas corpus, is in times of invasion, and they're using immigration as a tactic. And is there a litmus test used by judges or government officials to actually say, all right, we are at the point, we are at, like, let's say there was an actual invasion, to suspend habeas corpus? Or is this something that would be a trickle-down event where you'd say, all right, we have these examples? How do you even determine what would suspend something so important in our greatest document?
Well, we might be able to imagine a case that would be in a gray zone. Mm-hmm. But the problems with immigration are not a close call, in my judgment. The suspension power, allowing habeas corpus to be temporarily set aside for urgent emergencies, is limited to two circumstances. One is foreign armed invasion, and the other is internal armed rebellion. So it seems to me quite clear that we don't have anything approaching either of those tests. And therefore, for habeas corpus rights to be suspended would be unlawful and will not stand. Secondly, the ability for the habeas corpus rights to be temporarily set aside is a power vested in Congress, not in the executive branch. The provision is part of a statute. It's based on part of Article 1. That's the congressional part of the Constitution. Article 3 is the judicial part, hence Article 3 coalition, referring to judges. So Mr. Miller can say whatever he wants, and so can anybody else, but that doesn't make it true.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Judge Paul Michel. He's a member of Keep Our Republic's Article 3 Coalition, and right now we are talking about habeas corpus and what is it and why is it important. Judge Michel, say the Trump administration did find a way to justify suspending habeas corpus or ignoring habeas corpus. What would that mean for regular Americans? What would that mean for our legal system?
Well, basically, it would mean that anybody could be arrested and imprisoned anytime for any reason or no reason at all, and there would be no way that person or their family or their friends or anybody else could help them. They would sometimes simply disappear, as happened in many foreign countries where government authorities just, quote, disappeared people. Sometimes they went to jails and people knew where they were. Other times they literally disappeared. And then many times later bodies were found. So it's a terrible problem if there's no way to test the lawfulness of detention, because it means the people in charge of the police type organizations can do anything they want anytime for any reason, with no check on their power. The whole idea of our Constitution is based on checks, checks and balances. The courts are supposed to be a check on excess by the other two branches, unlawful actions. And correspondingly, if the courts act improperly, the Congress can step in. Judges can be impeached, so can other officials. So the whole idea is each branch is supposed to do its job, stay out of the job of the others, and serve as a check if one of the other branches goes off the rails.
Jane and I like to say we are not lawyers or judges. We are lawyer and judge adjacent. So I just want to ask you a question, and because I want to hear you say the words. When I talked about this on social media, someone said to me, well, this is just for illegal immigrants, isn't it? And another lawyer piped up and said, when they suspend habeas corpus, it's not for some, it's for all. There's no asterisk. If they suspend it at all, it's going to be applied to all. And there's not just a, well, habeas corpus, but if you are so-and-so. That is true, correct?
You are correct. It is either applicable or totally suspended for anybody and everybody everywhere in the whole country. So if habeas corpus were suspended, any American citizen who lived a totally perfect lawful life could be arbitrarily arrested by authorities, and there would be no protection and no check and no recovery from that. So it's a big threat. It's not a small thing. And it can't be limited to violent, illegal immigrants or any other kind of group. You are exactly right about that, Greg. You'd be a good lawyer.
Yes.
Oh, God, don't tell him that, Judge, because we're never going to hear the... His head is going to go...
For the record, I got all A's in con law, so just putting that there.
Judge Paul Michel is our guest, and we're talking about habeas corpus, and I think it's important that people understand countries like Russia and North Korea and China, even, they grab you and they disappear you. They do this with political rivals. They do this with anybody who can.
Journalists,
anybody who wants to speak out against the regime. That's what they do in those countries. I would think that is not what we want to see in America.
It would be totally inconsistent with every year of our existence as a country and contravene our law and create a horrible circumstance for all our citizenry.
I'm curious, when you talk to other members of your group, what is the level of concern when you hear things like this coming out of the Trump administration?
Well, I should say that misunderstandings and misstatements preceded the Trump administration. There's been a lot of loose, false talk about what the role of judges is, how courts act, why we need them. But I would certainly agree with the idea that it's gotten much worse in recent months under the Trump second term. And that's a great concern because so many things are being done by the administration at a rate never before seen, hundreds of initiatives, endless numbers of executive orders separate from other initiatives. There are something like 250 lawsuits challenging those actions by the administration pending in the courts, federal courts, all around the country. So this is a huge showdown battle between the rule of law on the one hand and unchecked executive power to do whatever they want on the other hand. It's very stark. It's very worrisome. The other members of the coalition are highly alarmed, and that's why we've all volunteered to try to help clarify things so the citizenry and media and everybody else and policymakers and politicians can understand what's at stake and how it all works.
And just to reiterate, again, going back to habeas corpus and suspending habeas corpus, if this Trump administration were able to do this, this isn't only going to affect people who are here illegally, bad people who are here illegally. This will affect everyone in this country. Mm-hmm. Every single one of us then would be subject to just getting snatched up with no, essentially no recourse.
And no basis, just because somebody's angry at you or somebody wants to get you out of the way, or you're a media person and they want to silence you, or you're a judge and they want to make sure you can't rule against them.
Which is funny, because as you say that, I'm thinking They're taking people off the street because of tattoos. They're snatching up judges in Milwaukee. So there are examples showing that they are pressing on the limits of this before they completely have to just say, well, you know, habeas corpus is just, it's an impediment. Let's just get rid of that.
It's just a suggestion.
Greg, you know, I think it's even a little worse than you say. I think basically the implicit message of the administration is there are no limits, none. We can do anything we want on any basis that we think is sufficient.
We're going to continue our conversation with Judge Paul Michel on the other side. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We will be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Our guest is Judge Paul Michel, a member of Keep Our Republic's Article 3 Coalition. And right before the break, we were talking about Stephen Miller and the Trump administration suggesting we just suspend habeas corpus. Who needs it? No big deal. And we did have a question on the live stream from State Senator Chris Alfheim, who asks Judge Michel, could the habeas corpus waiver have been used during the January 6th attack on the Capitol?
I wouldn't think so. The scale of what the statute of providing for the waiver looks to is, you know, mass armed invasion by a foreign power or a foreign terrorist organization or a armed rebellion like the American Civil War. The violence at the Capitol was certainly extreme and extensive, but it doesn't amount to an equivalent of a foreign invasion or a civil war.
But I think it's an interesting parallel. Just imagine if the administration at that point had decided to just snatch these people up and disappear all of them. All of those January 6th people got due process. Mm-hmm. They all went through due process and they were judged by juries of their peers. I can't imagine the shrieking that would come from some folks if they were not allowed the same protections under habeas corpus.
Yes, Jane, you have a very good point. Legal rights have to apply to everybody, and legal limits have to apply to everybody, including judges. And so the question is the situation or the action lawful? And that obviously, in the end, has to be determined by judges, not by officials of the other two branches. The founders gave us a great constitution, I would say. It's lasted longer than any other democratic constitution in the history of the world. It's the oldest democracy republic extant today. And they gave us a government of three parts, three branches. They're all important. They all have their role. You could think of it as a three-legged stool. If you break or take away one of the legs, we know what happens to the stool. Yep. The whole thing collapses and falls over. So all three branches are essential. Earlier, I used the phrase checks, but the rest of the phrase is and balances, checks and balances. The balances part is how each branch has to do its job, be respectful of the other two, stay in its lane, and avoid excess. And when that's done, the government works beautifully. We know how to do it. We've done it for almost 250 years. We ought to keep doing it, I say.
Yep, absolutely. In the couple of minutes that we have left, Judge Michelle, I did want to talk about Judge Hannah Dugan in Milwaukee. A federal grand jury did indict Judge Dugan yesterday on charges she helped a man who was here illegally evade ICE agents. I think it's important that people understand that when you go before a grand jury or a case goes before a grand jury, they're only hearing one side, correct?
That is correct. And so the first chance that the arrested person has to tell their side of the story is when it gets into the court following an indictment. And that's where the Dugan case will be going. So then both sides present evidence, and then a judge makes a determination whether a trial is even warranted. Maybe they'll say yes, maybe they'll say no. And if there is a trial, there still has to be proof by the government that a crime was committed and it's a serious crime, and therefore there should be consequences. So Judge Dugan will have her day in court, as we like to say, day in court. That's another important part of our system. It's very unusual for a judge to be arrested and now indicted. But of course, we like to say, and rightly so, no one is above the law, not a judge, not the president, not you, not me. And that's the way it has to be if we're going to have a functioning democracy under the rule of law rather than just under the rule of raw political power.
The one thing I would question, though, was the necessity of cuffing her and videotaping all of that. She wasn't a flight risk. It's not like she was going to go anywhere. In most instances, in a case like this, isn't it, here's the date we want you to appear, you show up, we'll release you on your own recognizance?
Yes, that would be the norm. And in fact, in a case like this, I would have expected the accused person to voluntarily surrender immediately. So no, there was no need for dramatic arrest and handcuffing. It looked to me like it was not only unnecessary, but inappropriate, because it just made a mockery of the situation. If the judge is guilty of a crime, she'll be found guilty. If she's not, she'll be acquitted. But the publicity stunt of having a dramatic public arrest was totally unnecessary. I think very unusual and very inappropriate. And I question whether the purposes were legitimate or it was another intimidation tactic aimed at judges and citizens in general. You better do what we want or you're going to get hammered.
Yep. Judge Paul Michelle is a member of Keep Our Republic's Article 3 Coalition. It has been so informative and so educational. Judge Michelle, thank you so very, very much. We would love to get you back on in a couple of weeks and just do it. Do a democracy check.
There it is. There it is. I like thank that. You.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be with you.
Thank you so much for your time.
You're doing.
Thank you, sir.
We have news coming up next. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Vast, statewide, countrywide. You can pick us up in New Zealand if you have the app. The Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go away.
I know I'll often stop and think about them.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.